Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Good morning.
Hey.
Okay, sorry. I had to get ready now.
We've been talking for 10 minutes.
I know, but now I'm ready. I'm in. Get the camera going. Get the whatever that thing back there that records our voices going.
You switch modes.
I do.
Well, you go from camera, we're chit-chatting, and then you go to... No. TV personality.
No, it's not TV personality. It's just
on-air personality.
I feel like I'm awake now. No, I just feel like I'm awake after doing all the crap that I don't love. I don't love anything administrative.
Which is so funny because I guess you do it because I don't do it.
Well, somebody has to do it.
Do they? This would be good. What administrative duties are there in a podcast?
So there's the recording it. That's administrative.
Yeah, that's right. Hitting a button.
No, it's not just hitting a button.
Well, that's what you just did.
Well, yeah, but I did more than that before you got here.
Okay. What'd you do?
I have to find where I've left my stupid little disc.
Okay.
Fortunately, I have a good system for that, so I know where it is. I just have to put the disc in, have to get set up, have to make sure the microphone levels are right. Then I have to get the camera set up. So it just takes, 5 minutes, but I hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the back end of it, it's just putting all the pieces of it together and then uploading it.
Well, I appreciate that. You do a great job. I just want to say that.
Well, thank you. Compliments from you mean the world.
Well, they do.
I know. So I said that.
It's like getting one from Simon Cowell.
It's very...
doesn't happen very often.
That's right. Good job, mate. We are on... How are you going to introduce us today? I forgot you were going to do something special.
Oh, was I?
Yeah. I wish you wouldn't sleep between podcasts because you forget.
Golly, well, you didn't even clue me in. What did I even say?
No. Just last time you were gonna talk about something new for season two, and this is season two, episode three. I think you had said, but I thought you had something new you were gonna share about season two today. I must be remembering.
Are you on all your meds?
I'm sure I'm remembering. I think you're the one that's forgetting it.
I don't recall that at all.
Okay, well.
I did. We had some of our kids' friends over for dinner the other night, and there was a fellow podcaster in the room.
Oh.
And he used the phrase that you have used before.
Oh, no.
Building the brand.
Building the brand. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. They're actually probably building a brand. I just use the phrase. We're not actually building a brand.
What does that mean?
Building
exactly.
a brand?
Yeah. I think I know, but
as best as I know, I think it's just making decisions about what Rearview Mirror podcast or whatever your podcast or your thing is. It's interesting. It's just saying, hey, this is what we're going to be. This is what we're not going to be. A lot of people use it in marketing terminology, I think,
Yeah.
I heard there's a corporation I've been working with recently, and it's interesting because every 10 minutes, somebody will say something. Yeah, I've been working on my personal brand. I think what I need to do is... Ooh. Yeah, and I'm from context clue, I'm trying to figure out exactly what it means. I kind of sense it's like, okay, I've got to make sure I don't act this way in front of that person, but it's okay to act this way in front of this person.
Do you think that's what it is?
That's what it sounds like almost.
That's interesting.
I've got to make sure that I'm presenting myself in such a way. It's kind of like the executive presence world, There's a certain way in which I have to carry myself so that those above me perceive me in a certain way. It's, building the right image almost, it feels like.
When I'm looking up a company or I'll see something flash across, CNBC or MSNBC or something, every CEO just about has the blue navy dark suit on, no tie.
Yeah.
Second button on the shirt. That's just kind of the thing,
Yeah.
So somewhere that's become part of the brand, I guess.
That's changed though.
It used to be coat and tie.
Yeah. It used to be the tie. Really tight.
High and tight. Double knot, double Windsor.
That's exactly right.
Solid. I wonder what my personal brand is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be funny to have?
Oh, I'm sure there's people that could spend 5 minutes with either of us. And I don't even know if I'm defining it right. I mean, I think that's kind of how you think about it, right? Something similar to that.
I would think so. I'd never thought about it till you just said it.
Yeah.
That phrase had never come across my...
Well, so when the friend who was over your house last night was talking about building his brand, did he give more context for it?
Well, he was talking about it in context of they're primarily a guest... Driven okay. podcast,
yep.
Mental health guests,
interviewing
super
people.
Smart guy. Mm-hmm. I think it's interviewing, and they had somebody on there that was a big, they are going to have someone on who's, his words, TikTok famous.
Oh, wow.
And so there are several hundred thousand followers, and I think he said guests were, they decided to go the guest route to build the brand.
Right. Got it.
So, yeah. And I guess that name recognition, what we're about, yeah,
that would
what
make
you
sense.
Can expect from the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I would love to tap into your TikTok followers sometime.
You can do that. And you just let me know when you want to do it.
Okay.
You can tap away, baby. I will allow you access.
All right, you're a good friend. You're good.
I thought we got rid of TikTok. Is that banned now?
Or is it still a thing? I think it came right back. I think it was banned for like 4 hours or something like that.
All right.
I don't keep up with the news, I realize, at all right now. I don't know why, but just...
I thought you did.
Well, I think I have historically, but lately, like, you know, I'm so not up to date on some things that way.
Do you watch the local news?
No, not anymore. Yeah. I figure if it happens in my yard, I care about it. It's not necessarily good. But
you're not concerned with what's going on in Smyrna?
Not a lot right now.
Yeah.
Hey, but I did pick up the highlights. I didn't watch it from that basketball game last night.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, this was the stat I saw that was incredible.
Okay.
Before the game last night, in the NBA Finals, teams that are leading by 9 or more with 3 minutes to go are 181-0.
Wow.
In other
That's
words,
unbelievable.
First time in 182 games that a team has come back from 9 behind in the last 3 minutes of an NBA final game. And then I saw the highlights and the shots. Holy mackerel.
It was like, again, like what, not, don't tune out all the non-sports people. This was a phenomenon.
Really?
I've been watching the NBA since, I've been watching the NBA finals since they were tape delayed on CBS with Brent Musburger in the 70s. I mean, you didn't even get a primetime slot.
Right.
I mean, and so... I've never seen anything like what the Pacers have done in this postseason.
Wow.
The number of fourth quarter comebacks.
Yeah.
It's uncanny.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden they just start making shot after shot after shot. The other team tightens up and they did it again.
Yeah.
On the road.
Yeah. Yeah. On the road.
They did it to the Knicks twice in New York in the first two games there. It was just, it that would be a psychological study in itself. That would be fun. It's just been incredible. Well, uncanny.
So what's the kid's name that,
Halliburton.
Thank you. I read a thing last night or this morning. It said that he has hit 5 shots in the last 3 seconds of the game during this playoff run, and that ties Reggie Miller's career of last 3 second shots.
That's what I mean.
Crazy
it's really,
like
it's just, like,
yeah.
What is going on?
That's so cool.
Last night. We'd been up in Nashville and it was taping or whatever the term is now, but I'd rewind started kind of mid third quarter and it was getting late and I thought, this looks in hand. And I thought I better just hang tight and watched it. And sure enough, crazy.
Yeah. Anything on your mind today to talk about?
Oh yeah. Just you name it. I got so much on my mind.
Okay. Well,
it's full.
Good. So I've been looking back over all these questions that have come in and I did this for just a few minutes before you got here. And I thought, I highlighted from about 3 different people. There's some questions about work. You up for talking about work today? Not your don't worry, not your personal work, but work is
okay,
a concept.
Good. Oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's a concept. Yes,
this is those rearview mirror moments where people are asking some questions. They're just like, you know, from your perspective.
Okay.
Looking back, what do you think? So
sure.
I thought we'd kick these around.
Let's do it.
The first one is this: from your perspective, how does work look different for this current generation than when you guys were coming up? You know, these people are late 20s, early 30s in their career paths. And I know both of these folks that have sent these questions in, successful, moving along. But so it's a good question. How does work look different for this generation? And from a career lens, what advice would you offer?
Is it the same question from 2 different people or?
Very similar questions. I'm trying to conflate them into one question. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. How does work look different? Well, I think COVID changed things.
Boy, that's true.
Probably forever. I mean, I had a guy tell me last year, I thought this was a good comment too. I'll throw out some comments and then we can kind of
go from there. Yeah, I love it.
He said, you know, the 9-to-5 concept really came about post World War II. Mm. Shifts in factories, kind of the same for office, but you didn't have technology.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get a phone call, you had to get it in your office. Well, now, I mean, my phone is right there.
Right.
I've been on it I had a text at 5:55 this morning that was work related, and I had one at 8:55 last night.
Yeah.
And so one thing in the you know, from the 30,000 foot level that's changed is just accessibility.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's so different, isn't it?
I think the expectation from companies is that you are accessible, whether you are self-employed or you work for a company.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably very little loyalty either way, down or up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you got to be willing to move.
Mm-hmm.
Not logistically or geographically, but this, I think there was a notion of nobility 10, 20, 30 years ago that you stay in one job for 30 years. That's really...
Get the watch when you retire.
Get the watch. Man, you've done a great job. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. That was the way the work world was set up then.
It was, yeah.
I don't think that's the case now. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to have your resume ready at all times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good observation. What did you say right after COVID changed it? Shoot, there was another thing you said I thought was so good. It was in between that and... Shoot, I wish I could remember it. But... Anyway, I'm sorry. I was going to make a comment on it. I can't remember.
What did I say? I don't remember.
I know. Well,
it'll come back.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried.
Good.
I think when you were talking about that, I do think the whole technology change is massive. You know, I hear in my office all the time the angst and the stress that people are feeling from this expectation of immediate availability and almost all day long, you know? And I've often told the story because I just remember it so clearly. And it you know, it's such a country story. It was one of my dad's uncles. My dad's uncles had the greatest nickname. So we always called him Uncle Buckshot. Yeah. It came from, they were stealing watermelons.
Self-explanatory.
Yeah, they were stealing watermelons one night when they were kids. And the old farmer who they were stealing from came outside and just shot a shotgun up in the air, you know, just to scare them off. And when Uncle Olin was his name back then. So in some ways he got an upgrade to Buckshot, I think, but there was some Buckshot in the back of his overall pockets, you know, just like, so the joke was he had been run so fast that they caught it. Who knows? But Uncle Buck, I was at his house once and he was just, the phone started ringing. This is pre-everything technology, not even answering machines. And so I just stopped talking and he looked at me, he goes, go ahead. And I started back talking and the phone rang again and I paused and he just looked at me and said, Uncle Buck, your phone's ringing. He goes, I know. I have that phone for my convenience, not for theirs.
Wow.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
This is in the 70s, you know? But I think that's something that we almost have to recapture. This generation needs to recapture that. Yes, I have a phone, but it's for my convenience, not for my bosses, not for my colleagues, not for anybody. It's for my convenience. And gosh, I mean, I know there's times you got to respond quick. Good. Be grateful you can do it. But it's really okay also, I think, to lay that darn thing down and just go, I'm not available. This is dinner time. This is play with the kids time.
I had a conversation with a couple friend of ours the other night at dinner, and the guy is he manages sales reps. Enneagram probably 6. Personality has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
There are some personalities that can't not confirm a meeting. Can't not send a thank you text or a response, or have anything lit up on their screen. You know, they're just, or not take a call.
Yes.
And so a lot of times, I mean, I'm self-employed. My partners know this. I'll play golf. We're good.
I'm getting the next question ready. Excuse me. I'm locked and loaded. I would play golf, partners. I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't know if I was going on a tangent. You didn't know where to go.
I apologize.
No, that's all right. But I answer my phone if it's him, if it's my guys and over there, and they know I play golf sometimes.
Yep.
But I can do things at one time. But you know, sometimes I don't. I don't always feel the need to answer it, or I'll get back to that later. But if you're wired like that, like my buddy was saying, he can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not gonna enjoy playing.
Yeah.
And you know. It could be anything, not just playing golf. It could be just enjoying a day out somewhere. But he's got to physically take the day off and have that put away. And so I think, again, like we talked about on some other subject, I think you need to know yourself and where you can, how best to put the boundaries up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think there's this thing I've been thinking about a lot lately and just hearing and seeing and even reading a little bit on is this book, The Anxious Generation, has been so interesting to me, but just the impact technology is having on us that's heightening our anxiety. And so for some of us, we look like we can just multitask really easily, and we can be on the golf course, and we can take the phone calls, and we can send the text, and maybe we can. But I think we also need to consider, is it that I can and I'm that multi-talented, that, you know, that ability to multitask that well, or is my anxiety so high constantly? I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to take care of that. I got to take care of that. I got to take care of that. Oop, got to swing a club. Got to take care of that. Got to take care of that. I just think it's worth being mindful of what's driving me to be so type A, so driven, so accomplished. Because right. There's a shadow side to everything in life.
Sure.
I just don't want to miss those, you know?
Well, I think for me on that one, it's the responsibility that offsets the perk of being self-employed. Mm-hmm. And self-employed's not always a perk. Mm-hmm. But it I don't be. Have to, yeah. If we want to go to the beach tomorrow and we can afford it, yeah. I can go. Yeah. I don't have to ask anybody. I don't have to tell anybody.
Right.
And the expectation is if I'm going to do that, I've got to be available. Mm-hmm. So if I've got standing conference calls or people call, I'd work while I'm there. It's just a, right. It's a rhythm.
It's a great flexibility. Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
I think the other thing popped my mind with this question about, you know, what have we seen that's changed? I don't know that we've seen it all because we're not in that generation of work. But one of the other things that jumps out to me is I feel like in the last 20 years, maybe there's just been a significant emphasis on culture of an organization. It's probably been there longer than that, but I just feel like it's so popular right now where I think back to some organizations I worked in when I was in high school, college, you know, just making money to get by grocery stores, UPS, that kind of stuff. And culture didn't matter. The only thing that mattered was productivity. You know, you're going to get those trucks loaded and the next one's loaded. You're going to get those groceries on the shelf. You're going to bag the groceries. You're going to check these people out and get them out the door. It was just crank it out productivity. And so, you know, who gives a crap if you like each other? Just get the job done.
You think that's how culture is defined as... How do you define culture?
Well, great question. I mean, I think one of the ways is just what's the environment like of where someone is working? Is it a culture can be a culture that's locked and loaded productivity. For example, if you're in the Army and you're in battle, you don't need to hold my hand. You know, I don't want you to hold my hand. I just want to shoot enemies and, you know, surviving. Right?
Right.
And so culture there is super aggressive, move forward. It's command and control. It needs to be. Everybody didn't get to sit around the table and vote of, hey, which way do we go now? Somebody makes that decision, you know? But I think there's other cultures that are more collaborative in their orientation, and a better product can come out from it because we want to get around the table. We want to have conflict. We want to get to the best solution, the best possibility. But, you know, I think the thing I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about culture is that there's this sense of hey, let's make sure that there's this, I don't know what the right word is, Steve, like this healthy workplace environment where people aren't raged against, aren't bullied, where there's a sense of collaboration, where there's a sense of, you know, value for what you do, and there's compensation for what you do. As opposed to, I feel like when I was growing up working, it was just that here's what you need to get done, get it done, and be glad that you got your, you know, minimum wage paycheck or whatever
right,
it may be.
Right.
But I do think that emphasis on culture is really good. Now, like anything, I think we can swing too far on anything. And we can create cultures that we spend so much time trying to, you know, make it fun and inviting and cool and engaging that, you know, I look at some organizations, I go, I think you could get that same work done with 40, 60% of the people that you have.
Right.
But they spend so much time making sure they're team building. And again, I think team building is good. So I like the culture emphasis that this generation, for the most part, in a lot of workplaces, there seems to be an intentionality of being mindful of that.
When we had the couples we had over the other night, that were our kids' friends are all 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And so that came up probably three times. I asked them what best and worst job you've ever had?
That's a great question.
And so we talked about, you know, just things they had done. But three of them mentioned just a better culture. They felt valued that's a little bit of a foreign concept to our,
I think so,
our crowd.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, personality and by trade or whatever I've decided to do work-wise, I'm not in a collaborative environment. Now, right. Sometimes we'll put our heads together to come up with a solution, but we're very much a, you know,
yep,
shoot, fire, aim, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And so, the idea of collaboration is, you know, I have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah. Say more about that. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, the assumption is everyone in the room collaborating has equal expertise or value to whatever the solution you're trying to come up with. Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I've got a, if I've got a critical legal document in front of me related to a transaction, there are some people in the room, I don't need their opinion on it.
Right. Right.
I need my attorney's opinion on it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or,
yeah, that makes sense.
Or there, you know, if you're trying to find a solution to a, you know, a more general problem that's not as specified as legal, maybe that doesn't need to be 20 people.
Well, you know, I don't think that's mutually exclusive of collaboration the way I think of collaboration.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, you got to have the right people at the table for whatever conversation, whatever topic of conversation you're about. You know, I 100% agree with that. I don't need everybody to weigh in on every decision. I don't know how you do that. You can't do it in your family, you know, when you're raising kids,
right.
You know, so I know you can't do it in a business place.
Right.
But
I guess my last experience too, with a corporate group, they had staff meetings pretty regularly,
mm-hmm.
and everybody came to the staff meeting, and it was long and man, painful.
Yeah. Staff meetings can be one of the most painful things on the planet.
Because, and inevitably, and my guys that are still in that world will say this, I don't need to know that. There are 12 topics discussed.
Yeah.
One is relevant to me.
Right.
Maybe once a month or once every 6 months just to get a, you know, touch point of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But too much information I don't need.
Right, right.
For
right.
the most part.
Right, yeah. No, it's interesting because silos can be so bad, and the reality is all of us have a silo that we're best in. It's
sure.
both and, right? You know, like if I get too siloed up, then I don't know what's going on. I'm going to cause trouble for other people I'm working with. But if I have to know everything that everybody else is doing, my productivity is probably going to drop because I need to be in my silo doing what you're paying me to do, right?
What's the best job you've ever had?
This one. For
this
sure.
This podcast?
Yeah, working with you.
Oh, come on.
No, just what I get to do now, the last 15 years by far. Yeah. I just love this. This has been just the best. Best connection with who I am, I think, of anything I've done. And I've enjoyed other jobs as well, but this one has just been, I've got a great boss.
She's pretty good.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. It's funny when you said a previous job you were in, this sets us up for the second question that again, from these listeners, when did you know it was time to move on from a particular opportunity? Did you experience more excitement about what was next or an eagerness to leave the present situation? I think the kind of question behind the question, my guess is, you know, how do I know when it's time for a transition? Thoughts on that?
What do you want to do?
Mm-hmm. Back to that question.
Yeah. I mean, typical stuff I think is, well, you can make the list of pros and cons.
Sure.
Sometimes I think we make work decisions too hard.
Mm.
Where do I want to take my family on vacation? Well, okay. The funnel is, what do we like? What's our budget? Can we do it in the time we have allowed?
Mm.
Funnel the options through that.
Yeah. That little grid.
That grid. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What spits out.
Mm-hmm.
And here are our choices.
Yep.
Not to make it oversimplified, work is a big deal. I don't mean to make light of that at all, but sometimes I do think we make it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how long have I been there? Am I enjoying it? Is it productive? What else would I want to do?
Yeah.
But again, this comes from, I like change.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do different things. Mm-hmm. I like to have multiple mm-hmm. things going. So just know that it's through mm-hmm. that lens.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not always been successful for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, sometimes there's a real advantage to staying somewhere for a while and grinding it out. But again, I think most people, even when you ask that question, whoever asked that question, probably in the back of their minds, I think they know,
mm-hmm.
you know, you kind of know intuitively when it's
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when I thought about that question this morning, I thought, you know, I was raised by, you know, in a family where loyalty was and generationally too, was such a key value, you know? And I think my tendency when I look back on my work career, my tendency was to say in organizations longer than I probably should have. Said differently, I wanted to leave earlier, but my sense of, well, yeah, but. And some of it was my probably Messiah complex. Well, but and if I leave, who will do this? I should be able to do this, which, you know, crazy, but in real time, I think right. that's, especially my 30s. Gosh, I know I was doing that in early 40s. I had one job where, you know, 2 months in, I realized, oh my gosh, this is not the culture I thought it was. This is not the team I thought it was. There's some stuff going on here that I don't think I'd be good with. I need to find something else to do. And fear kicked me in the butt. And I was like, oh my gosh, but how will I provide for my family? What will I do next? So I ended up staying 11 more years before I finally had the courage to leave. I would not recommend that to anybody. But I think some of the things I thought about with this question, I mean, I love your responses. Well, what do you want to do? I think that's true. But when the question, when she said, or he, whoever says, when did you know it was time to move on from a particular situation? I think one of the things I think is, make sure your eyes are open to look at what's really going on and not just have your head so focused on what you're doing. So, for example, if there's no opportunity for you to advance and you want to advance, I think that's a good reason to say, hey, maybe it's time to do something different. Or if you feel like you speak to leadership, you talk with leadership, and the responses you get back over time, you realize, wow, the responses and the behavior aren't matching well, then – for goodness sakes, don't think, oh, maybe it'll change next year. You know, I think I think when someone shows you their butt, believe them that's kind of what's true. That's how they're going to be. I think also the other thing I think about in this is if you're in an organization and for some reason, you know, you begin to realize, wait a minute, I'm not sure that what they're about and what I'm about are super congruent. And I'm not talking about, you know, polar 180 degrees apart.
Right.
I remember in one role I was in earlier in life, I remember thinking, this organization does a great job of playing baseball. Metaphor, you know, man, they're a great baseball team. They function this way. They do this. They move methodically. It's precise, you know, kind of baseball-like. And I remember one day I thought, I feel like I'm the guy standing in right field wearing shoulder pads and a helmet, you know, and I started realizing I like football. I like to move hard. I want there to be contact. I want something different than what they're doing. And so at that point, it wasn't that they were wrong or I was wrong. It was just going, oh my gosh, why have I stayed so long trying to be a baseball player with the wrong gear on me? So I think a lot of it is the willingness to be self-aware and look and just go, man, is this the best fit for me? No place is going to be perfect. I get that. But is this the best fit for me? Are my gifts and abilities being maximized? Is there opportunity for them to be? And if there isn't, one of the things I say all the time is you don't have to get pissed about it. You don't have to get mad about it. It's just like, okay, well, it is what it is. Nobody owes you something.
Right.
You know, the culture doesn't owe you something. The organization doesn't owe you something. And so I think part of my woundedness coming into the work life was thinking, well, if I do this for them, then they're going to do this for me. I don't know that kind of quid pro quo thinking is a good way to be an employee. I think you just need to go, man, what are the realistic opportunities? Do they work for me? And if they don't, like you said, pull out the resume.
Man, that's good. When you said that, I thought, gosh, that part of my battle over the years of that is the father wound. Mm. And whenever I get in a company, I expect whoever's leading it to take care of me in a way.
Oh gosh.
I don't know that I consciously expect that, but man, the way it shows up is I don't want to ask for anything. I don't want to make them uncomfortable. Yeah. I've had to really change that thinking in the last couple of years, you know, consciously. Mm-hmm. And, Jen's been on me about that for years. Hey, you're more valuable than you think.
Yeah.
But you know, that's just I gotta be aware of that.
Yeah.
The other thing I think about too is having lunch today with a friend of mine who's an attorney downtown. He's a great thinker. It's good to have somebody in your life that's in your particular industry and out of your particular industry. I think that you can run stuff by.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Because sometimes they'll have feedback. When you are in an industry or in a job, you tend to look at things through that lens as a function of familiarity. Comfort.
Yep.
And so sometimes it takes a new set of eyes. Like I remember I had a friend that said, he was just asking me some questions about his boss and he was a younger guy. He's a younger guy and say, my boss paid me a nice bonus. I've been doing some extra work for him. And I said, man, that is great. I'm happy you guys enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I know him well enough to know, ask him a question. I said, now, if your guy had hired that position, what would that cost him?
Yeah.
Oh, a lot more than the bonus. So just keep in mind, and that was good. Don't need to not be grateful or be resentful right. of what yeah, you got, but exactly. just keep in mind,
yeah,
you got a benefit and he's getting a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let a guy because he's older or a lady because they're older
right.
run you over.
Yeah, yeah. I really appreciate your candor of talking about the impact of the father wound on work. I think a lot of us men go into jobs trying to make up for something that we didn't have or are reacting, responding the way, you know, out of fear. Oh, gosh, I don't want my dad to do this to me. I heard a guy say a number of years ago, and of course, you know, my background was pastoral for a number of years, and he said most men who end up working in the church are doing that because they're working out issues with their mother. And I remember hearing that thinking, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. That makes no sense whatsoever. And all I can say is over the last 15 years, I think he's onto something. You know, I do. I think there's something about, and it may not be unique
What's
to the
connection?
Church. Here's my simple brain about it. And he didn't elaborate on it a lot. And I wish I'd had a chance to do questions with this guy. But I keep thinking, you know, the church is always, you use this female pronouns when we're talking about the church, you know, the bride of Christ, her, she, whatever. And I think when a lot of men come to the church to work for her, to help her mission be accomplished. Now, again, I think they would say they're doing it for God, they're doing it for Jesus, a different language. But I do think there may be something true about that. And I think there's a lot of men who can naturally, I think, gravitate toward a place of caregiving and nurture, and often part of leadership within the church, that's maybe connected to some mother wounds too. So I think just to be my point of bringing that up, I think just to be mindful of, gosh, is it possible that even in my work life, I'm recreating some of the good, bad, or ugly in the relationship I had with my father or with my mother? Because I think that's a real thing we just need to be mindful of.
Right.
It may not be true for some people, but I think for a big number of folks, we've got to be mindful of going, oh my gosh, that's what I'm doing. I'm recreating the chaos I was so familiar with as a child.
Right. That's a good point.
The first boss I ever had in grocery store, loved this man in so many ways, just a great guy. But he was just a crazy rager, man. He would just dog cuss you the minute he'd look at you. You know, if you did something wrong, I mean, you knew you were going to feel the wrath, right? Well, I remember later in life thinking, why did I put up with that for so long? What was that about? Well, God love her, my poor mom. Yeah, I mean, my mom, she never dog cussed me, but man, when she would get mad, I mean, it was just big. Well, I think in my simple mind as a little boy, I learned that if somebody loves you, they yell at you so that you do better. Mm. Right? I mean, it's just a kind of the construct I had.
Yeah.
So when I'm 16 years old and I go work for this guy in the grocery store and he screams and yells at me and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, he just really cares about me. I never looked going, this dude's got some rage issues. He's got some anger issues. He's really unhealthy. I didn't have that kind of brain
right,
to think
right.
about. Now, that's extreme perhaps. But I think to be mindful of where might I be recreating some other story that just feels familiar, but really isn't good, really isn't healthy for me.
I think that's good. I think that'll bring you back to where am I now as a, you know, 30-something-year-old parent of two or three kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do I want my life to be? What do you want it to be?
Yep.
What do you want to be doing? Because I think right now that, you know, probably more different kinds of jobs than ever before, more different ways to do things.
Yes.
And so you're not as locked in, you know, this is the time to be evaluating.
Yeah.
But if you don't do the evaluation you're talking about, you're going to end up in the same spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I think another great diagnostic question when you're kind of going, okay, wait, what's going on with work right now? Is this good? Am I okay? Sometimes it's just step outside of yourself. Ask a question like, man, would I want my best friend to be working in this place? Would I want my kid one day to be working in a place like this? Because sometimes we'll be more gracious and generous to our children or to a dear friend
right.
than we will be to ourselves. And if you hear your answer going, man, I wouldn't want my kid to be putting up with this, then kind of push pause. Well, wait, why am I okay with me putting up with it?
Well, and also I'll flip that coin over.
Yeah.
Because I think we're making the assumption that everybody that's listening has that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just have to have a job and make money.
Absolutely. I respect you saying that.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to do things you don't like doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I know there are people in that situation and, you know, you don't get that luxury. Hopefully they will at some point, maybe, you know, try. But man, you got to.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to. You got to pay the bills.
Yeah. Work's not supposed to be your place of ultimate satisfaction or ultimate purpose or ultimate contentment, I would say.
That's the other thing I think that I hear this generation, I think the generation that question comes from a lot about, hey, what's my passion?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question and really hard to find in the work world, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It rarely those converge.
You can have moments of.
Yeah.
Finding it. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe better said, hey, find where my skill set is best used.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
with Frederick Buechner, I think we've talked about this maybe before somewhere along life's journey together, but one of my favorite authors, he says that vocation is the place where your deepest passion meets the world's greatest need. Now, there's too many superlatives in that definition for me to love it, but I appreciate what's behind it. That there is something about vocation that's nice when there's a need and you know you can meet that need to go to it. But I think, like what you were saying, I think we can easily turn it into, oh my gosh, my work has to be my sole source of passion and purpose. And I just think there's so many other things in life that are probably even more important than just work and career.
Yeah, which goes back to your original statement. Sometimes you just have to put the phone down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not take the call, not take the text.
Yeah, that's good. Let me look at a couple of other questions here, because I'd highlight like four or five of them on these documents from people.
Was there another part to that question, though?
Oh, maybe there was. Thanks for catching me. Oh, yeah. Did you experience more excitement about what was next or an eagerness to leave the present situation? This reminds me of the old... Am I running towards something or running away from something kind of scenario?
I'm so unhealthy in this world. It for me, it's both.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't get out of here fast enough. I can't wait to do the next thing.
Yeah. I love the honesty.
Golly. And it's, you know, to quote the great Eddie Murphy, it's both good and terrible. You know, I mean, it's.
He was a theologian, right?
He was. He was a great philosopher and a theologian. Golly, it's both sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, that depends on your wiring, you know.
Yeah. That's true. I think it's probably very situational, isn't it? Because I can think back on my life of times as like good riddance, bye, you know, and I'm so excited about next. I can think of times of leaving going, I don't know even what I'm doing next and scared to death, but just knew that the situation was no longer tolerable and had to leave for my own sanity. And I can think of times when I loved what I was doing, but the next opportunity felt like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to. This opens up another opportunity, another door for me I need to go towards. Mm-hmm. So it is probably very situational.
Need to do.
Did I?
Need to go towards.
Listen, I love that word.
Yeah, you do. You like to be needed.
I like the need, maybe.
I think, but again, I would say, gosh, and I know we've probably beat this horse to death, but so much of that question is related to how you're wired.
Yes, I think you're right.
My friends that are Enneagram 1s, 6s, sometimes 3s, high loyalty, they're not going to leave a place quickly.
Yeah.
Even for a great opportunity. Yep. There's a lot attached to that leaving. And so if that is your personality, you know, just be aware of that and just know it's going to take longer to work through that in your brain probably.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think maybe that's the best, the combination of what we're saying is the best answer is it's so situational.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a bad work environment, of course you're going to be eager, thrilled to get out of there. You know, if the next opportunity feels like, oh my gosh, this is better and higher, of course you're going to have a great sense of excitement, eagerness to move toward it. And I think what you said at the beginning is probably the truest thing is that sometimes it's both and, you know. I don't think that's sick. You said something like that. I think it's just true.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, you can, especially if you read the stories of the Old Testament, just as they're written, there's constant moving, constant uprooting, constant change with very little explanation.
Yeah. 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 Get up and go.
And so, you know, you don't always have to have all your ducks in a row before you make a move.
Mm-hmm.
There's some wisdom in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I believe at this age, you know, I've talked about what do we believe now. I don't know that I believe God opens one door while another is still open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No? You're looking at me like you don't agree with that.
I'm repeating it. Say it again. God.
Let me say it a different way. I think sometimes we want a new door open. We don't want to shut the one we're in.
Until the other one is open.
Until the other one is open.
Oh, gosh, that's me. Yeah. Yeah.
What's most of us. Yeah. I mean, it relates to fear, mm-hmm. unhealthiness. And again, I'm not saying, I think there's a lot of wisdom. In,
right. Don't be irresponsible.
For example, right, trying to get a job before you quit a job. However, if you're a person of faith, it is not unprecedented, biblically, mm-hmm. to leave something not knowing what's coming next.
Yeah.
And you can't get around that fact. Yeah. I don't know what you do with that. Yeah. And I'm not advocating irresponsibility.
Right, I hear that.
However,
sometimes got to jump.
You just got to jump.
It's funny that you say that. When in 2010, when I was transitioning out of a job, I'd known for a while I needed to leave, but I think need was the right word there. By the way, wasn't just wanted to. It just wasn't a good place for me in that season. Right. You know, great place, but just wasn't good for me. And I could not pull the trigger. I just was so scared of providing two kids in college and, you know, do I have any skills that I can make money with and who would ever hire me? I mean, all that thinking going on in my brain. And Laura literally said what you said to me one day. That was part of my pause a minute ago. It was going, oh, my gosh, I think that's exactly what Laura said. And because I said, oh, I just don't know what I'm going to do next. She had asked me, why don't you just quit? Why don't you just turn your resignation. I said, because I don't have anything to go to. I don't know what I'm going to do next. And I remember Laura said this. She goes, I've been wondering if God's not going to open up the next door for you until you close this door.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, woman. And in just a matter of a few minutes going, gosh, what if she's right? But I didn't like that. I didn't want to have to take that step of faith. I didn't want to have to trust that I needed to do that. I look back on it now and I think some of it was maybe faith. Some of it was just like, I needed to close that door just so my brain could be emptied and cleared enough to go, okay, now what's next? And it was really in short order after that where I began realizing, wait a minute, there are some other things I could do.
And in fairness to you, I'd say the place was good. I don't know if I'd describe it as great.
Yeah.
When you left.
Yeah. 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 That's fair.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I think my biggest, I don't want to defame the place. I mean,
no, it was what it was.
No, I know you're not. But I think I probably over, do you know how I do that? Sometimes I overprotect people. Oh gosh, I'm sick.
Well, I think the door open waiting on another door to open is just sight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just
getting a little space.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Just living by sight. And I think there is a faith element to it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Not to overcomplicate everybody's decisions out there.
Yeah.
But there is some, you know, all those things are good. They're good things to wrestle with.
I think the thing, kind of wrapping up this question that this one we've been on about, you know, changing opportunities, you know, excitement versus eagerness to, excitement to leave versus eagerness for the new opportunity. I just think if I could, you know, rearview mirror moment, I don't regret ever leaving one place, going to another place. I don't have any regret of doing that because I've always learned something at the next place.
Yeah.
You know?
I would agree.
I do regret how long I stayed in some places where I knew there was something different I want to be doing. And so I think what I would say to, you know, people thinking about transitions in their job is, man, if it's there, be courageous. Take a risk. Don't wait. You know, a year or 2 years, or literally for me, 11 years. Don't do that. I think there's just take a risk. Find out what's out there. You know, I think the days of you're only going to have one or two jobs in 30 years are so
gone.
So gone. I mean, they were gone in our generation at one level, but yeah, they're for sure gone now.
That's true.
And I don't, you know, I think there's just still this fear of, but I need to make sure my resume doesn't show too many changes. I'm not sure you need to do that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so anyway, I would just say taking a risk is a big part of job, career, vocation development, I think.
think it is too. And so I'm going to say the opposite of that for me.
You always
for
would.
Personalities, just for different personalities. I probably left a few places too soon.
Back to contentment.
Yes. Without trying, not saying I shouldn't have, because like you, I did it. I've always enjoyed the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a couple of places I probably could have tried to work something out that would have allowed me to stay. But instead, I, you know, have a tendency to take my ball and go home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's a great balance. I think that's a great balance.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I didn't mean it as the opposite. I meant it as a, you stayed too long. I left too quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's, and
good,
I think
good
some
cautions, good cautions right there to think about.
I think so. Some introspection, because I can, my tendency has been, I can come into a startup or a scale up operation and I can bring some energy and some success and some productivity. And I can also bring chaos.
Yeah.
And when that winds down, that's all been good. When that winds down, I lose interest.
You're not a manager. Just let me kind of status quo.
I'm not
quo.
A maintenance
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, maintenance. That's a better word.
Yeah. And so, but sometimes maybe there's some conversations that need to be had. Hey, we're in the maintenance phase now, but we're thinking about this as a new startup. Or, you know, and so just, as you said, just looking back.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a caution.
Yep. Yeah, that's good. Here's another question under this same broad context of work. As a working parent, now we're going to talk about parenting and work. As a working parent, I often feel guilty about taking time to go do my own hobbies or take a girl's trip. It just seems like more time away from the kids. I loved her follow-up question. Is this something I won't grow? Does this get easier as the kids get older? But let's talk about it a little bit. Feel guilty when I take time to do my own hobbies or because I feel like, gosh, I'm already working, so there's all this time away from the kids.
What do you think?
Well, I this one hit home to me because I think I had almost the opposite problem. I remember the name John Marshall. John was a counselor here in town. He's moved to California since, but I spent some time with him, and he was just a great guy. And we were talking about a season of my life where I felt like, gosh, I want to be doing more teaching. And in my mind, I thought that was supposed to be on Sunday morning church days, right? And he said, well, hey, what if you started some kind of group on Monday night or Tuesday night? And, you know, you could have, that could be a venue, that could be a platform for you to do some teaching there. And my immediate response was, well, I don't want to do that. He said, well, why? Is it you have to be on the stage Sunday? I said, no, it's just that I don't want to give up a night. I want to be at home with my family and my kids. And I remember John challenged me. He said, well, it sounds to me like being home with your kids every night is more important than you doing something for yourself that you might enjoy. And then he said this, he goes, I wonder if your kids are an idol to you sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, in my mind, I'm like, no, I'm just trying to be a present dad and this, that, and the other. And I think for me, I put hobbies and even vocationally, things that I could have done that I think would have been brought more satisfaction to me. I put those on the back burner because my narrative was I've got to be super present with the kids. So I think when that swing's going on, if I've got to be super present, there's a danger there. And like this question is asking, I think it's just a matter of kind of your phrase. I've just got to do some evaluation awareness of myself. You know, we need to spend time with our kids. I think need's the right word there again, but I know this is the right word. We need to have space for hobbies. I did not do that well. And so I think what the kids get then out of me is a version of me that hasn't done anything that's restorative. You know, a good hobby restores you in some ways. A good hobby energizes you. A good hobby lets you walk in the door a better version of yourself than had you not done the hobby, right? That's what it needs to be or should be,
I think.
But I think when I hear this, I think that's a real tension. A lot of working parents and maybe working moms feel more than working dads do, perhaps. But I think for both genders, I think it's an important thing to go, I've got to make sure I'm doing something that's taking care of me, restoring me, and I certainly want to be present with my kids. But I don't know what else may be behind that question. Thoughts on that as you hear it?
I'm not sure I'm a great person to answer that question because I think when you combine, you know, again, my father wound.
Yeah.
What, same as you, wanting to be around my kids, probably an idol in a certain way, but yeah. I mean, my thought was, you push things aside and raise your kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's not 100% healthy, but, and right. my introverted personality, that all worked in my favor to really look like a good dad. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I've been a pretty good dad, mm-hmm. not nearly as good as probably what people's perception is.
Right.
You know, because right. all I those things were easy for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not an Enneagram 7 wanting to be out doing stuff all the time.
Yeah. No FOMO for you, right?
Never.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. that's a, so it's an unfair, it's a bit of an unfair bias.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you got to look at it though. How many girls' trips do you take?
Yeah.
When do they come? What does your husband think about that? Mm-hmm. What does your wife think about that? I didn't play golf when my kids were younger. I had a couple of spells where I traveled some, and I found other things to do, so I didn't have to travel as much during those years, but I didn't have a ton of hobbies then.
Yeah.
That didn't involve them. I picked them up later in life. So I do think there's a sense of in which I'm a parent. I'm a spouse. Mm-hmm.
That's what I chose.
That's priority.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And my refreshing can happen. It needs to be pretty carefully picked out and planned.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I appreciate that warning sign. I do. I think it's important. Yeah. Again, I think you and I are talking about this in the opposite sides, but I think there's something really powerful if we can converge them in that. I know that my sense of I need to constantly be home to be there for the kids kept me from doing some things that probably would have been restorative, generative for me. And I don't look back like regretting mm-hmm. that I didn't pick up golf or whatever when my kids were growing up. I'm really glad for the priority they had. When I look at my kids being parents now, one of the things I'll feel often is, man, what are you doing for yourself? Are you doing anything for you right now? And again, I don't mean spending 6, 7, 8 hours on a Saturday. I never understood how I could have never justified that. Especially weekly, but you know, guys do it all the time. But I think there is something to be said for, what you just said is so powerful. I chose to be a spouse. I chose to be a parent, and those are my priorities.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with a girl's trip, but like you said,
sure.
Process it well with your husband, figure out what that looks like.
Right.
Check as the kids get a little bit older, check in with them. There's a conversation that can be had about that. It's not, can I go on a girl's trip? Obviously, that's not the conversation, but it's just pay attention. Check in. How are they doing? Man, are they needing more? One of the guys that you and I both know used to talk about our sons need father food. You know, they need time with dad. You know, I think our girls do too. And our kids need father food. They need mother food. They need the presence, but it's also okay if you're out for 24 hours or something sometimes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be okay.
Yeah. But I do love those last two questions. Is this something I will outgrow? Does it get easier? I don't think you outgrow it, and I don't think it gets easier. I think there's just a tension around that you have to manage the tension.
Well, it gets easier practically when you're empty nesting.
Absolutely. You do outgrow it. That's right.
Yeah.
When the nest is empty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then your spouse may say, why don't you take more trips with your guys or girls?
So, why don't you join a bowling league, right. Steve?
Do you not have a hobby? Because it would be great if you did.
One last question today.
Oh, man, we are rolling through them today.
It's fun.
I didn't know there were that many. That's what I meant.
Well, what I did was I went through the, I don't know, 6 or 7 emails that we've gotten in. I thought, I'm going to see if I can put these in some categories of questions. So this is, like I say, I think these are from 2 different people. Looking back, what have you learned about God's design for work, ambition, and production? I know. I'll babble for a second, just because I've taught on this some in the past.
And babble away.
So I got a couple thoughts spinning around.
Spin.
Obviously, work is good. Foundationally, God created work. You know, you always take us back to Genesis. I will today. Genesis 2, you know, God gives Adam work to do. He's to tend the garden. That's his job. You know, he's got responsibility. After the fall in Genesis 3, he still has responsibility of that same work. The problem is now that work is going to be brutal.
It sucks.
It's by the sweat of your brow. It's filled with thorns, and it's going to be hard. That's just welcome to a broken, fallen world that we live in. But, you know, so I always think about this. Work is really something God created. Work is good, but work is not ultimate. It's not the most important thing we do. And kind of like what we talked about 20 minutes ago, I think it's kind of doubling back on that. So I think, you know, ideally, I think work, it's great when work can have purpose and meaning. But again, not ultimate purpose, not ultimate meaning. Work needs to serve work needs to be right-sized. It needs to be what it is, you know. And again, I think it's wonderful when, and I feel like I'm in this season of life for me personally, so I know it can happen. I just think it's, I just talk with enough people, I think it's unusual where your work really can be a natural expression of who you are. I think 98% of what I do is that way. It's the 2% that I have to do that's administrative in my job that I hate. But besides that, I truly love what I do work-wise. That's not been true most of my adult life.
And that didn't happen until your 50s.
Yeah, yeah. But again, part of that second half of life stuff we've alluded to at times, by the second half of life, you're going, man, I know what I do well and I know what I don't do well.
Right.
I know what I find a satisfaction in and I know what drains me. But it takes some years of learning that about yourself. And
yeah.
I don't think you can do that with an assessment. You know?
And in your 20s and 30s, you're probably going to be ambitious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
What's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about that in a book we read years ago together, you know, that the first half of life, we're building something. It's really important that ambition serves us. But at some point in life, ambition almost has to be surrendered. And what I mean by that, not that I'm no longer ambitious, but it's like, man, ambition can't be my God. It can't be the most important thing. It's great to be ambition, but it's, again, it's got to be surrendered without being suppressed. You know, it's not like I don't have ambition. But my ambition can't be the only driver at the front of my mind. And I think in your 20s and 30s, it's a pretty darn big driver. And again, I think rightly so.
Yeah.
But I think there comes some point where you begin taking a breath going, wait a minute.
Whenever you're using words like ambition and production, that's probably your bent.
Exactly.
And so the not knowing who this person is, my comment would be, sounds like you need to consider how do you relax, be present somewhere other than work a little bit. Mm-hmm. That seems like that's what comes with that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's big words, work, ambition, and production, right? When we can just accomplish a lot, when we can move forward a lot, nothing wrong with that. But is that the only thing we're doing? Feels important to me. Hmm. I think too, when I think about these words of ambition and production, especially those two words, I think they're seasonal, you know, there are seasons I don't know your world well, so shoot me down if this isn't right, but I think there's seasons in that real estate world where it's just the ordinary day of another grind. But then there's times when all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, the haymakers, the money makers, it's the rainfall. It's like, look at this. Oh my gosh, I am producing a lot because everything that you've been grinding on for months kind of comes to a head.
And I think, in theory.
Exactly.
Hypothetically. Yeah. Yes,
but true. I think it's probably true in all of our jobs. But right. I think what I was thinking about as I said that is I think there are times when work is just ordinary. It's just another day at the office, so to speak. And this is the power of a healthy mindset of being able to go, hey, today I'm just doing what I do. But there are these other seasons then when all of a sudden it's like it feels like everything is coming together and, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, today this happened, we closed this and we accomplished this. But we don't get the high moments without the ordinary moments. Every time I use the word ordinary, I think of the church calendar. I won't get the numbers right on this, but remember someone shared with me years ago that in the traditional church calendar, there's like, I think, 12 holy days throughout the course of the year, you know, and it's like, you know, Christmas, Easter, you know, Ascension Sunday, you know, there are these days that the church historically is called holy days. But then rest of the calendar is called ordinary time. Hmm. And I kind of like that there's this high percentage of the calendar that's just ordinary time. And there's these other times that are like, man, they are extraordinary times. And I think with productivity, especially in most industries, every day is not 1,000% productivity.
That's right. That's a good call.
Yeah. Maybe if you're manufacturing and you're cranking out X number of cans of pinto beans every day.
But even that, it's ordinary. You're cranking out X number of cans of beans a day.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, that becomes ordinary.
Yeah.
And the extraordinary. Yeah, that's good.
And I don't know that we're meant to live on that high all the time.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
I don't know that we're made
I'm
that
pretty
way.
Sure we're not. Yeah. 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 Well, I love this question. And, you know, you said you don't know this guy. You're right, man. This guy, he was a college athlete, Division I college athlete. He is a go-getter.
He's a driver.
He's awesome. He's awesome. And he's awesome. Yeah, I love this man. And he is a driver. And I don't know, but I think it would be easy for him to be so driven that it would be easy to go, wait a minute, is work taking up too much space? And so it's a great question. I think it's a question that a lot of men, a lot of women, a lot of people working can identify with is, yeah. Man, I want to be successful. I want to produce. I want to be ambitious. I just want you to hear me say, those aren't wrong. They just can't be ultimate. They can't be everything.
Right. Because yeah. They're not going to give you ultimate satisfaction anyway.
Yep.
But they can give you some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah. But, they can provide. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Work. That was a good conversation.
It was.
Yeah. Any last thoughts today as we wrap up season 2 to episode 3?
No.
Okay.
Season 2 has been really good so far, I think.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week for next version.
Maybe we'll take a week off and then start season 3. If
that makes you happy. You're in negotiations with a lot of them right now, right?
You don't feel great about the break we took, do you?
Oh, no. No. I want consistency. But I actually did enjoy it. Enjoy the break.
Yeah. You need some downtime. Yeah. You can't always be productive and ambitious. You got to take some time off, too.
Okay. All right. We'll see you soon.